You're listening to Crossing the Desert. This podcast is a reality series about how I build my small business in the Emirates. I am Isaac. In each episode, I share how my own business is going. But most importantly, I learn from other entrepreneurs who came to Dubai from India, Egypt, Palestine, Caribbean Islands, UK, Australia, Russia. Stories of their success and challenges will help me on my own way. The podcast is brought to you by Fortis, the omnichannel platform that integrates POS, CRM, orders, payments, and loyalty programs for small and medium-sized businesses. In this episode, the entrepreneur leaves Dubai. In the middle of COVID, she sells her business and leaves for her homeland with her husband and three children. And then, well, you'll find out what happens next.
My husband and I got married in Australia. We were pretty young. I mean, I was 28, I think. He was 30. And we kind of looked at each other after we got married and we're like, oh, now what? We don't want to just, you know, buy a house, the same old car, live in the same spot we've been living in for the last whatever how many years. And we just thought, let's go on an adventure. So we booked a really long honeymoon, 3-month honeymoon. And we had a conversation about, let's look it out, like pull up our CVs and let's just shoot them out into the world. And we thought, right, let's shoot them out to, we'll do, you know, the London, the New York, the LA kind of thing, but then we'll let's send them to some tax havens. And so off the CVs went to Hong Kong, Singapore and Dubai, because they're the ones we knew. And we actually had some good old friends who were living here at the time. So on the way back from our honeymoon, we actually came from Europe through Dubai and stayed for, I think it was like 4 or 5 nights. You know, next thing we knew, we were packing up our apartment in Melbourne and moving here with a suitcase each, and that was it.
Your husband immediately got a job offer. They find a community, a new friend. At the time, Georgina wasn't an entrepreneur yet.
Look, I was a really different person when I moved here, only in that I worked full time in an office for EMA for about a year and a bit. And I was part of their interior design team. We were sort of a specialized team, I guess, where we were doing projects that were coming online. A lot of styling and fit out work for show villas, show apartments, in terms of like the decoration, so all the soft finishings and soft furnishings. And I worked on some great projects. I got to go to Jordan a lot, which was so cool. A little blonde Australian girl that had never been anywhere in the Middle East, like, you know, fresh off the boat sort of thing. And off I went to Jordan. As I was landing, I was like, oh my God, where? And I loved Jordan. The people there were just so beautiful. I had a great time there. So yeah, so I was there for about a year, and within that year, I fell pregnant with our first child. And I guess as soon as I fell pregnant, I kind of thought, I do not want to stop working, but I certainly don't think that I'll be able to be the mum, you know, have that newborn experience and that baby experience where I am right now. So I started plotting how I was going to keep my foot in the game and keep working with a baby. So I kind of started putting the foundations together for this, my retail concept then.
Oh, okay. That's a very strategic move.
Yeah.
To understand what kind of retail project Georgina entered the Dubai market with, you first need to see Dubai with your eyes.
There's so many examples of, we all moved here with a bunch of our friends at the same time, or new friends. We'd all kind of come from London and New York and all these Australians we sort of knew through people. And we used to just meet for a drink at the end of the day and everyone's like, oh, so what did you do today? And someone would be like, well, I had an interview in the marina and I got there an hour late because I took the wrong turn off Sheikh Zayed Road, and then I had to walk across a car park in a full suit and I was sweating and I had to cancel the interview because it was so revolting that I couldn't possibly be seen in front of, you know, this big boss. And oh, it was just so funny, all the stories. I'm sure it's still like that a little bit today, but back in those days, it was before Google Maps was only just coming onto the scene. So you'd go to a dinner party and someone would send a PDF instructions like, go left down blah, blah, blah street. You'd look for the villa with a yellow balustrade. Turn right at the big tree. Like, it was before Google Maps. So it was hard.
God, thank God I got there, you know, after Google Maps and all those things were working.
Absolutely. And then when Google Maps first came in, it would take a while for it to catch up because Dubai's roads were so incredibly quickly built. you know, you'd be driving along and this new road would just exist and the one that you were supposed to be on wasn't there anymore. So it was just, nothing was here. There was literally like Marina Home, which is fabulous, but that was, and then Pottery Barn had just opened, Crate and Barrel was around, a few others. And it was all quite sort of American, big kind of company stuff.
So imagine Dubai 8 years ago, small and without all those wonderful craft places we're used to. Now it has grown. By opening a map of Dubai, you can take a round-the-world trip. Here's an Australian surf spot. Here's a Caribbean sauce kitchen. Here's an Indian self-care showroom. And here you can buy Palestinian oil. But back then, there were almost no such places and no maps where they could be located. And Georgina felt it also lacked a place with an Australian character.
Australians, and I'm biased, obviously, but Australians have a way of taking a trend and making it their own, and they make it a little bit more fun or a little bit more tongue-in-cheek or a bit more quirky. They just have a very interesting way of creating the current trend, I think. So yeah, so we were flying all this stuff in. So in my head, I'm like, there needs to be a supplier here for this stuff. So that's really where it came from. So as I was approaching all my, and they were my contacts from Australia, I was sort of saying, hey, I'm thinking about starting my own retail concept. What's your minimum orders? Have you shipped over here before? Slowly but surely. And just started gathering information, I guess, was that first step. Just
creating a list of suppliers, financial model, initial branding ideas. Georgina managed all this along her office work. And now imagine, on a regular day, she works with big weekends ahead.
And I left my computer open, all my books, everything, just to come back to work after the long weekend. And I never returned to my desk. And I went into labor. Then I was probably about 32 weeks pregnant. So usually you're about 39 weeks and you go into labor. It was a really early baby. It was all, everything was fine. I mean, it was awful at the time, but everything worked out really, really well. So it was fine. An early labor. So I was not planning on being out of that office or out of that job or out of that situation for weeks. Yeah, I think when Angus, my first, was maybe like 2 months old, I came back in to collect my box of things that someone had kindly put to the side for me. So in terms of being organized or prepared or whatever, I wasn't. And at 3 months, a friend of mine was opening a collection of stores. She had her head office above and she had this area downstairs, and her idea was to carve up small kind of market areas, if you will. And she said, I heard you were working on a concept, would you like a space? And I honestly thought about it for like 4 seconds with this screaming 3-month-old baby. I was like, yes, yep, because I knew in that split like 4 seconds, I knew if I didn't take that, I was never doing anything. I wasn't going to be able to do this. This was like the opportunity. So I grabbed it. And I mean, look, when I say it was, I was hands-on. I was working the shop. I had my husband or my nanny bringing the newborn baby down to the store, and I was sitting in the change room feeding the child, and then the baby would be taken out and I would just be. So I was hustling hard. It was really intense. But yeah, I got that first collection in. I mean, we had a bit of a disaster the opening weekend. I only had 2 suppliers in and my shelving hadn't arrived. So I had like crates. I made it look cool. Like we did this cool lighting, we did crates and cushions everywhere and this linen hanging from the ceilings. It was fine, but it certainly, I was like, oh, but anyway, that's when you learn not to sweat the small stuff. Like you just got to roll with it and make it happen. I'm an Australian country girl and we're very practical. It was just like, right, baby done, like move on, right, this is now my
tick.
Life. What changed was, yeah, I'm like, tick, well done. No, what changed though is the, and every mother or and father probably, but every mother, there is no way to explain how much time you have before you have children. People, listen to me. There is so much time before you have kids. Like it's endless. It's all you. You just do what you want. You go where you want. You be who you want. You spend money on whatever you want. You do whatever you want, whatever time of the day. As soon as you have a child, that time gets sucked into the abyss. It's gone. And it's wild learning about that. But I could go back in time for anything. I mean, yes, world peace and all of that stuff. But I would go back and I'd tell myself that. I'd say, Georgie, this is your time to do things, because as soon as these babies come along, it's just, there's no time. And that's what they always say, like, give a job to a busy mother, because we are so bloody efficient. We are like, we just get it done because we have time slots of like 10 minutes, half an hour, 1 hour, like 5 minutes, pretty insane. So that's probably what changed the most. Obviously, I was absolutely ecstatic to be a mum, and but he was a tough baby. He was preemie and I had a really, really tough time with him. So I think that absolute shock to my very physical core and mental core of like, oh my God, what have we done? I love him so much and I'm so happy, but oh my goodness, I did not realize how hard it was going to be. Obviously, starting a new business is like a nice little thing to throw into the mix, which a lot of people wouldn't do. That's when you just sleep goes, basically, and you just don't sleep and you just keep going.
That sounds very healthy. You just don't sleep. That's it.
Just don't sleep. You eat scraps of food when you can. No, it's definitely not healthy. I think it was just like, well, roll up your sleeves, Georgie. Suck it up. Here we go.
So she accepted the offer to open in the space. The rent was 60,000 dirhams per year for 40 meters. She had 2 months for reconstruction, during which time they did the renovation. For this, they used her husband's network in construction. They spent 150,000 on stock to fill the store with a markup of about 20% for logistics, shipping, and customs clearance.
And that was a whole new world for me. Like, I'd done logistics, very basic logistics, just with what I was doing with EMA, shipping things in, but it was sort of like you'd give it to someone and work it out. It was more timing and cost and things. But this is like, right, I need to get this from Australia the cheapest way possible to Dubai, clear it through customs. Like, am I allowed to import it? What does my license allow me to do? So it was a lot of learning on that side, and also expense. It's expensive to ship and land things here. So we buy something from Australia, and by the time we land it here, we've spent 20% of the cost of that good to get it into our store. And everyone's like, why is it more expensive? I'm like, because it's in Dubai. We got it here for you. I don't think people remember that. They used to remember that back in the day when there was nothing here and you had to ship and fly every single thing that you bought online in. People got it. They really, really understood why things were priced the way they were and how you got it there. And they were like part of that understanding, whereas now they don't remember. They don't remember where they are because everything's so accessible now. So yeah, I mean, there's a few random figures thrown out there for you, but it was certainly pretty scrappy in that, like, oh, we know a guy that does that. Let's get that guy in. Oh, we can use that as a center table from out my house. Like, let's get that in. I should try and find some photos for you of the first shop and send.
Oh, please. Yes.
A scrappy process, but it was beautiful. And no one had seen anything like it in Dubai before. So we were met with great excitement, especially within the Australian community, because we had some really well-known Aussie brands that people loved, like coveted, and we brought them and they could touch, feel, see, and choose them for themselves in real life. And they just loved it. So it's cool.
You know, for example, if we talk about nowadays, I kind of understand how you can get accidentally like bump into some nice, beautiful shop and like buy there. Yeah, something. And we're talking about Dubai, right? It's difficult to bump into something. At least you have a purpose to go there.
Yeah.
How did you attract new customers or like the first clients?
It was really hard. You've nailed it. It's exactly right. And I still say it today, Dubai is destinational shopping. You don't just like, oh, let's just go for a coffee. And then you finish your coffee and go for a stroll down the high street and find fabulous things. Like, it's just, no, even if you meet at a mall, you're like, let's meet here at the mall. And you get to that spot and then you kind of, you're in like the cafe area or the, everything's so segmented. Nothing is naturally occurring or organic here. Yeah, it was really, really tough. So what we ended up doing, but we basically said, why don't we try and get a cafe happening in here? So my sister at that time was working at a well-known Australian cafe restaurant chain, one of their branding managers. And she was also thinking about having her first baby. This is a couple, like probably a year or two in now. Started talking to the landlord and said, hey, why don't we open a cafe to draw more footfall into the area? So Ali, my sister, started Boston Lane. So she started that cafe, did all the branding. They couldn't get a a full kitchen in there. They weren't allowed to. They couldn't get like a grease trap and extraction and all that stuff. So she's like, why don't we just do a toasty bar with smoothies and coffee and toasties? But we brand it, like really strong branding, and do a really cool interior fit out. So I did the interior fit out for that, again, on an absolute shoestring, like literally, like it would blow your mind how cheap that was. That cafe opening was really the start of that space working, because there was a reason for people to come down there, get a coffee, and then look around the small shops on offer. So yeah, that was the key, was having a reason other than just you to come down. Yeah. Again, guys, if you can imagine it, because you can't imagine it now, it was very hard to get a good coffee. It was just before all the incredible coffee concepts opened. There was nowhere. There was like Tom and Serge and Jones the Grocer, and that was lit, and Starbucks, which as an Australian, we do not do Starbucks. So that was it. So yes, it was like a new coffee shop. It was really like homegrown and chill and like not corporate-y. It was like the coffee that we get in Melbourne.
What amazes me about Dubai is that 10 years ago, there wasn't even a map to comfortably navigate the city. 5 years ago, there weren't all these designer shops, salons, and coffee shops. What will happen in another 5 years is up to us to decide. Small businesses have made a big part of what Dubai is today. Stunning, diverse, addictive. Each business made a contribution to it in their own authentic way. Fortis also makes a contribution. It is a young business that helps small and medium businesses to color the map of Dubai and compete with large corporations. And to do this, they need to study small business in all its forms with genuine interest.
So the two things that we learned about our customer are the following.
This is JP Serhal, marketing director from Fortis.
The first is that many of them continue to operate their business in a very manual manner, meaning using a pen and a paper to register orders, to accept payments. They still operate on cash only, and they don't yet accept cards. And a lot of merchants actually come to us saying, look, I need to start accepting card payments because I'm missing out on sales. When customers come to my shop and they want to pay by card, but I only accept cash, then over here, I'm missing out on an opportunity for increasing my sales. So a lot of merchants are still not digitized and are not very tech savvy when it comes to technology. And so that's why we're very optimistic and excited about this market, because we know that we can empower those merchants in digitizing their operations, in helping them streamline their business, and help them save a significant amount of time, and therefore help them grow their business. And so this is why we're very excited. The second learning that we acquired was how to talk to those customers. We know, for example, that messaging apps like WhatsApp and Telegram work a lot better than emails. For half a year, we invested in email thinking that we needed to crack something, but it turns out that it's just a channel that doesn't work that often.
Fortis is growing very quickly, largely due to the word of mouth. You know how it works in Dubai. If you manage to attract one client, they will recommend you to others. And now the word about you is spreading everywhere.
And you never really forget your first customer as a startup. Today, thankfully, we have a lot more than just one customer, but we have also acquired a significant portfolio of customers. We have auto shops, we have gardeners, we have hair salons, beauty shops. So it really goes all over the place. We have clothing stores. And that is a mirror of our convictions when we started Fortis, which is that the kind of businesses that we aim to serve are retail businesses and service businesses. To be able to sell to small merchants, you often need a lot of credibility. And so we're very lucky to have had very supportive customers who are happy to talk about us to their peers. And so that's how and why we've been able to increase our sales every month.
Georgina's business was also developing. She launched a website and Instagram, and then the story took an unexpected turn.
Basically, I had my second little boy. So in 2018, I had him and it was going really well. I also sold a fabulous Australian furniture brand called MCM House. And I actually set up a showroom at my villa, which was really cool. And because I still had a lot of interior designer friends in the from EMAR days and that those sort of contacts, we did a lot of projects, was keeping a really nice incoming in to sort of go into the business. And then we had a pop-up at Zabil House. When Zabil House in the Greens first opened, we opened a small shop in the foyer there, which went really, really well. We'd had the two stores open, so our main store and then our pop-up at Seville House, which was great. And then we had the furniture and the website. So we had some nice little sort of tentacles out into the world, if you will. And then in 2020, I was pregnant with my third. And at the time, obviously, though, we didn't know what was going to happen.
Sorry, the turn is actually not that unexpected. You've been through this too, unless you started a business after 2020, COVID. This experience unites us all.
I'll start this by saying Dubai handled COVID amazingly well. Like, in hindsight, there was no better place to be than here. It was phenomenal the way that they got through that. We'd had the shop closed for 3 months, I think. We weren't allowed to be open, but I think we were shut for 1 month, and then after that first month, we could do online deliveries. And I'm pregnant, and I'm going into the store, packing orders with gloves and masks on, and then delivering them because you couldn't get it. Like, again, back in the day, it was before Korean Box. It was before no one was delivering. So I was delivering packages around Dubai, which was probably like super dangerous in hindsight, I think, COVID, being pregnant. But that was, again, like, you just survive. You just pull your sleeves up and you just do what you got to do. And I think we'd got to sort of the 3 month mark, and then we were able to be open at certain hours with certain rules, and you could have a certain amount of people in the store. And so really, how incredible is that, Dubai? Like, 3 months, being from Australia, there was businesses closed on and off for 2 years. Like, they just died. They couldn't survive. And so Dubai was pretty incredible at getting things back and open and operational again. And you know, not that there was any special small business grants or help or anything, but just the fact that we were able to work was help enough. You know, we didn't need a government grant because we were able to sell our goods again. I think must have been towards the end of 2020. And I said to my husband, I want to go home. I want to go back to Australia. And he's like, yeah, cool. And we've kind of, this is where I need to not go into a long, boring story, but I think as an expat, you always have a bit of a chip on your shoulder about when you're leaving, when you're going home, when's enough, enough's enough. Have we clocked it? When have we saved enough money? When have we achieved what we want to do and then go home to normal life? And I think the COVID thing, having my third baby, I think it just tipped me over the edge. I was like, I'm done. I want to go back. I want my family around me. I want to have a baby in Australia. I want my two little boys to be Australian and I'm ready to go home. And so we were like, okay, well, what are we going to do with the business? So I was like, well, I can't close it. I will just won't be able to survive knowing that it's closed. I've put so much into it. So we decided to put up for sale. And this is, I'll cut this very short, but basically had a couple of different offers and there was like people that were interested in purchasing it but wanted me to stay in the business for like 3 to 5 years and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, look, I can't. I've got to move home. I'm about to have my third baby. I can't give you 3 to 5 years. I just can't. So we ended up finding a gorgeous couple, Australian and South African couple, who wanted to buy half the business. So they bought half of it, saying, we will be 50-50 owners. You can move home to Australia. You know, we'll be here. We'll operate it from here. And because the business is so tied to Australia, there's so much buying, there's so much supplier, you know, relationships and massaging and time that we spend talking to and being in Australia anyway. It's sort of, on paper, it worked out. So we did that.
They sold half of the business and moved to Australia with their three children. What were they doing there?
We bought a farm. I was farming. We bought a peony and rose farm. I was breastfeeding a baby. I'd put the kids to bed and I'd go out and like spray the roses and like weed. We have 1,200 rose bushes. Like, it's called a micro farm, but it was like a lot. And then we had peonies. We had sheep, we had cattle, we had chickens. Oh my goodness, it was so much. And I had Georges of Dubai. So all day I'd be running around. We also had an Airbnb on the property where we rent out this beautiful barn. So I was doing all the changeovers for that, running this business, doing all the farm stuff. You know, there'd be a fence down or the pump broken in the dam or there'd be aphids in the roses that needed to be sprayed or something needed to be watered or cut back. Oh my goodness, it was so intense. And I had the two little kids at childcare, which was, it's like $200 a day in Australia. It's so expensive. And my eldest son, he was at childcare for a little bit and then started school. So I was doing a 20-minute school run for him, dropping the little kids. They needed to be picked up at different times. It was just crazy. And there was no help. Australia just, no one has help there. Like, it's just not a thing. My parents are amazing, the biggest legends, but they have their own lives and they still work. They aren't able to drop everything and, you know, be my nanny. So I think after a year, I think Trig and I just, and also because the business had lost that energy a little bit and I was getting a bit, like, not frustrated or anything, but I just was feeling a yearning to get back in there and, like, just get back in there. I think we just, yeah, looked at each other. I think it was New Year's Eve 2022. And we looked at each other and we're like, do you want to go back? And my husband was like, you are insane. You're insane. And I'm like, I know. That's why you love me. And he's like, oh my God. We've just moved 3 children and a 40-foot container home to Australia and you want to go back. I'm like, yep. So we actually went to Saudi first. We did 8 months in Saudi, ended back in Dubai. So ended up back in Dubai. Yeah.
And I think that New Year's Eve is actually the best time to review the past year and make some important decisions, you know, because the world is so chaotic and hectic and fast that you just need to do that, not to get lost. I've been doing it for the last couple of years just because I've noticed that some of my ideas or plans are just getting vanished and washed away with the noise because you just forget about them. I mean, how can you forget? But you just forget about them. So, for example, I want to visit Morocco for the last 5 years, but this is my probably top one destination that I want to visit. But every time I just forget about it. So that definitely goes to my New Year bingo. Also this year, I would love to give 25-30 public speeches, to climb to the mountain. We can start with Everest. And to start investing, pretty much. That's my plans. But back in 2022, the main card in Georgina's New Year bingo was to return to Dubai. And not just to Dubai, but to her half-owned business.
We've been back for almost 2 years. And now my business partner is moving on to something new. So we're about to buy the business back again 4 years later. Which is wild. Would never have seen that.
This is the plot twist I've never expected, to be honest.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, that's unexpected. Although, when I re-listened to our interview with Georgina, I realized that it's not that unexpected. The thing is, she's really good at her business. And who could give up something they love so much and so good at?
I need to spend more time on the stock. Because that's really what makes the shop. And that's my strength as my skill set. You know, I can do a lot of stuff, but that's really the value that I bring, I think, is that ability to buy interesting stuff, but also the right amount of things, the right timing, landing it at the right time, hitting our customers when they need it. It's a lot of strategic kind of thinking and planning. Yeah, but the way I work is really with the Australian suppliers. They tend to do 2 major collections a year. They show it in our summer, so June, July, August, which sucks a little bit because I always end up going back to Melbourne for winter, which is their winter, and freezing the whole time when everyone's in Europe, like dancing around a Greek beach. And I'm like, just like dying of cold in Melbourne. But yes, I try to go to those shows then and also just meet with my suppliers. So at least that's a yearly catch up, have a coffee, go to their warehouse or their showroom or whatever and chat about things. The biggest admin that I have is my suppliers. I absolutely have close relationships with them. You know, we don't use a PO system where we just like shoot a purchase order out and it's fulfilled and it shoots back and like all automated big business. It's like, hi Caroline, how are you? How's your daughter? Oh my gosh, I saw you were in Europe for the summer. Did you have the best holiday? Okay, cool. Can you send me the new catalog? And then she wrote back, oh my God, absolutely. You know, what's happening with the shop? We'd love to get this collection in. Oh, actually, do you know what? We're not supposed to offer you this, but hey, check this out. Because you've fostered that relationship and they trust us, they've been using, you know, with us for 8 years. So that's not something I can hand over to someone being like, you know, shooting off a purchase order. A, choosing the stock, because that's, you know, that's what I do. B, but B, that admin side of it. It's really important, and it's what sort of kept us, the suppliers we have are very loyal to us. You know, I'm sure they get approached by people all the time in Dubai wanting to stock them, and then they say, no, we're with George's of Dubai. So it's, you know, keep those relationships sacred to you. But also just, I've got lots of friends still in the industry, like in the design industry and fashion and things there, and just like going and absorbing what they're doing and what they're wearing and who they're hanging out. Like, I don't, just restaurant, like it's just, you just get the vibes. It's just the vibes. Even being in a restaurant and seeing like what glassware, they, like Melbourne's very on trend. Like it's cool. I don't know if you've ever been. And it just all just sits, and this is any on creative, it just sits in your brain. And so then when I go to buy, I don't even need to kind of research before I buy. It's all in my head. And so I see something and I'm like, oh, cool. And I reference it back to things that I've read in a magazine or I've seen in Melbourne or in Europe, wherever I've been. So I think getting out of Dubai is really key to a lot of creative people here, even though Dubai is amazing. But my old boss from EMA used to say, you need to get out of Dubai and windscreen wiper your eyes. Like just put the windscreen wipers on, flush it all, and just absorb like the really deep culture of wherever you are. And I think that's really the key to stepping out, like remembering if you're in a creative business especially, remembering to step out of the spreadsheets and step out of the cash flows and the staff visas and all that stuff, and actually be like, what am I good at? What value do I bring to the best of my abilities? And for me, it probably is that buying and being like, right, I actually need to put more time, effort and space around that for me to read a book or a magazine. Like I always feel guilty doing that because I should be with a child or like doing a cash flow spreadsheet or something. But I'm like, no, it's actually part of how I need to work. And so I think that's, again, for me, a learning as I mature into the business and into the role and I get more staff support on board, which I hope to be able to do this year as well. Yeah, to be able to kind of remember that you need to feed that creativity because it makes you better at your job and your job easier.
Since Georgina returned to Dubai and took her business, she has immediately dove into the work. The second store has been open for 3 months now. Plans include opening a third and developing an online store. But that's it. I mean, that's it.
You know, I definitely want to grow. Like for me, I think I've got two more shops in me and an elevated online experience, and that will be it. I think anything bigger than that, it's too big for us. We lose the DNA of what we are. We will lose the ability to be special and interesting and authentic, quite frankly. I think I definitely know where that level is. We're not there yet because Dubai is so pocketed that those bubbles, as I was explaining, there's people that don't know about us and don't shop with us because we're not in their neighborhood. So I've just strategically, I've got like two other stores in my head that would like a triangle in Dubai. So we're in ICD at the moment and we're in Motor City. So we need to come back to Jumeirah and then one other spot and our website, and that will be, and economically as well within the business, it works. That scale works. Anything bigger or it doesn't balance. So yeah, I think you can't lose sight of, and also I don't want to run a ginormous big company. I don't want to. I've got no desire to. I would like a small team of fabulous, amazing people that I have a relationship with and I get to work and laugh with every day. I don't want to like have people on emails that I don't even know their names properly. And like, no, it just doesn't interest me whatsoever.
What amazes me most about entrepreneurship is that you can do it however you want. You can do it with a background in sales or marketing, or you can do it with extraordinary work with suppliers. Everyone has their own strength. You can pivot at any time, close and reopen, leave and come back. You can dream of global scale, or you can put a ceiling on growth. There is simply no wrong way to do business. Isn't that amazing? You're listening to Crossing the Desert, podcast by Fortis. Fortis helps seamlessly connect businesses and their customers and run the business. It assists in attracting and retaining customers, selling products and services, accepting payments both online and in stores, and managing finances and personnel. Join Fortis social media. Links are in the episode description. Follow our podcast or add it to your favorites. Give us 5 stars or a heart and leave us a comment. This will help other listeners find out about us and we'll love to read and answer them. Production by HatchUp Podcast Studio. Showrunners and editors, Alexandra Volkova and Yelena Volkova. Producer, Daria Sanikova. Sound designer, Ksenia Kazantseva. And I'm your host, Isaac Delonin.